Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. In his 2019 State of the Union speech, President Donald Trump called for an end to HIV transmission by the year 2030. This was surprising to many as his administration has not heretofore had much to say about HIV and AIDS. Interestingly, we are at a watershed moment in the HIV pandemic. The United Nations implemented a so-called 90-90-90 plan in 2014, calling for 90% of people infected with HIV to be diagnosed, 90% of those to be in treatment, with 90% of those treated to be virally suppressed. In other words, to have their medication working effectively so that little to none of the virus is circulating in the bloodstream of those with the infection. The UN aimed the 90-90-90 plan to reach that goal by the year 2020, so we are close upon it. How are we doing? Well, perhaps surprisingly in Oklahoma, pretty well. Estimates are very close to the 90% targets, much better than other states in the U.S. and nations of the world. Nonprofits like Tulsa Cares have emerged to provide support and wraparound services for those infected with HIV and have had a very positive impact on the community, offering entry to treatment, nutritional, social, and housing support, and avenues to pursue better mental health and advocacy. Our guests today are Kate Neary, CEO of Tulsa Cares, and Dr. Madri Ladd, an internal medicine physician with Oklahoma State's Internal Medicine Specialists, where she specializes in care of those with HIV. On March 2nd, Tulsa Cares will be hosting their annual fundraising event called the Red Ribbon Gala at the Cox Business Center, which this year is being co-chaired by my wife and I. It promises to be a spectacular event. This year's theme is Turn It Up, a double entendre on advocacy and radio. Kate Neary and Dr. Madri Ladd are my guests today on Studio Tulsa Medical Monday. Kate Neary and Dr. Madri Ladd, welcome back to Medical Monday. So let's update from where we were more than a year ago. How are things looking on the HIV front nationally in terms of statistics? I heard you guys talking about some of the numbers. Dr. Ladd, can you give us an update?
Sure, absolutely. So we call our HIV care continuum, and we've looked at that across the years, 2011, 2014, 2016, and just kind of doing a comparison. In 2011, we're looking at HIV with 80% of those living with HIV are actually diagnosed. Then it would drop off to 60% that were actually linked to care, and then down to 40% that retained in care, and even 35% that were on antiretroviral medications, HIV medications, and suppressed on those medications. That has changed over time, and we've actually made some improvements in that continuum nationally. And when we look at 2014, we got a little bit better in terms of 85% diagnosed, and in 2016 up to 87% diagnosed. We're looking at targets at 90% for 2020, and I think we're getting closer to that nationally. We're also looking at retention in care. Our biggest problem has always been those out-of-care patients, and we're looking at linkage and retention in care, and those numbers have improved as well. Linkage up to 75% from the 60% before in 2011, and we're up to about 55% retention in care when we look nationally.
So let's just break a little bit of that down. So first of all, 85% now of people who are infected with HIV are know they are.
That's
so they've
right.
been diagnosed. So that's a big step forward, because it used to be, I think, that it was a major problem that people who were infected didn't know, didn't have access to testing, didn't want to get tested, mm-hmm. lots of things. So public
Absolutely.
Education and public health have been big drivers of that. And that number of 55% that are retained in care. So what are the barriers to people staying in care?
So some of the barriers that we frequently will ask about and oftentimes find mental health is a big barrier to care, and it may not necessarily mean that they have a mental health condition, but that they may not be under treatment, it may not be stable, they may have substance abuse, problems with transport, housing, all of those things, which I think Kate can probably add to why Tulsa Cares is involved with helping with some of these barriers to care.
Well, yeah, that's a great segue. So, Kate Neary, now that you've been at the helm of CEO of Tulsa Cares for 2 years.
Going into my third year.
Going into your
yes.
third year. So
lucky
what,
to be there.
Yeah, so what kinds of changes have you seen? First, let's address Dr. Ladd's question. So how is it that Tulsa Cares, let's remind our listeners, how Tulsa Cares helps overcome those barriers for people in need of services that are living with HIV?
Sure. So we're really proud of our relationship with the medical providers, obviously a critical component to making sure people stay healthy. But our goal is to try to address all the barriers that somebody might have for getting into care and staying into care. So a lot of them are issues around poverty, mental health, they're food insecure, they lack stable housing, sometimes any housing at all. And so it's really important and wonderful that we're able to tackle so many different challenges somebody might have all under one roof. And especially for a population that obviously still dealing with stigma and lack of social support. So we not only try to provide the social challenges that come with a chronic health condition, but the social support and stigma and advocacy and providing a safe place for people to come get the care they need.
And when we last spoke, I think your caseload was somewhere in the 700 number. And now I read where you're up to about 850 individuals who are HIV positive, who are working with Tulsa Cares or whom Tulsa Cares are helping with social services. And we talk about mental health, nutrition, transportation, housing. How does all that work?
So it really is a unique place that, like, so many issues that we can address in one place. And obviously getting the medication that you need is critical to staying healthy. But when you look at somebody who doesn't have a safe place to live or stable housing, obviously presents a huge challenge in getting the medication they need and keeping it safe, addressing mental health challenges, making sure they have enough groceries and food for the month, making sure they get help with transportation. We provide bus passes and guest cards to help them get to the places they need. We provide a weekly meal. We provide support groups. Our nutrition department has a weekly meal. We have a pantry that's full of not just fruits and vegetables and food, but also other things that food stamps don't cover. So just addressing all of those different things makes people in a much better position to be able to get the care that they need and stay focused on taking their medication properly and getting to the doctor when they need to get there.
And my understanding, too, is that Tulsa Cares is now going to be branching out and going a little bit beyond HIV to help people infected with hepatitis C. And that turns out to be an epidemic nationally, and I suspect in Oklahoma as well. Tell us about that initiative.
Sure. Oklahoma has one of the highest rates of hepatitis C infection per capita. And so we've been looking at that for a lot of years, and many of our clients are already living with hepatitis C in addition to HIV. So it's a natural progression that we've taken and just a really huge need in Oklahoma. So we've been doing some research for the past couple of years and started a small pilot program in 2018 to reach out to a couple of selected partners that focus on taking care of folks who have a history of injection drug use or incarceration, usually populations that have a higher rate of hepatitis C. So getting them in to see us, getting some baseline testing done, some education around the disease, and then looking to see who might be eligible for compassionate care drug assistance programs. And there are actually programs through some of the pharmaceutical companies that will pay for 100% of the treatment as long as somebody is in a good position to take advantage of that. And that might be making sure that they've gotten some substance use under control, that they're stably housed, that they are connected to a physician, which we're lucky to be working with OSU for that. And so it's our job to help make sure their case managed properly and get access to those drug assistance programs. And then really with hepatitis C, it's critical that these patients stay adherent to their medicine, that they're taking it every single day and getting really strict medical care, because that's what makes the medication effective. And so it's oftentimes calling some of these new patients daily and weekly to make sure they understand how to take the medication, because hepatitis C is curable now, and not a lot of people know that. And we're looking at 8, 10, 12-week medical regimens that once a patient completes that, they're free of hepatitis C. So it's helping take care of kind the poorest of the poor and people that are least educated around the disease.
And that is something that's really remarkable when you talk about curing a viral disease, because we're much more familiar, with the HIV model, which is a chronic care model and requires this, essentially, as we think of it, lifelong adherence to antiretroviral therapy in order to keep the viral load suppressed, to prevent the immune system from collapsing and these opportunistic infections. But with hepatitis C, which if left untreated over many years can ultimately cause liver damage and liver failure and some folks liver cancer, all of that progress can be arrested by taking these anti-hepatitis C drugs. So does Tulsa Cares sort of act as the agency for folks with hep C that are, do you attest, or does a counselor there attest to the sobriety, or that the client may be no longer using drugs? And then you mentioned the part about compassionate use, because those drugs, I think, have a price tag of, last I read, it was 12 weeks was $84,000, and I think sometimes it's over $100,000. So, I mean, it's exorbitant.
Yes.
And you're able to really get, free medication, essentially, for patients who can demonstrate need?
We are, and through several of the drug companies, as long as people fall into some kind of some income guidelines that people would need assistance for that. There are programs that will cover the cost, and there are some additional eligibility requirements around that. So sometimes it's 6 months sobriety, sometimes it's stable housing, and so our social workers kind of gauge that per client. And some clients aren't ready for that. And so instead they get some education, they get to take advantage of some of our nutrition programs or mental health services, and we work with them hopefully until they can get to the point where they're a better candidate for medical care. But we're at least helping them get the baseline testing they need and get some understanding around how to keep themselves as healthy as possible until they're eligible for the medication, because it is very expensive and we want the patients to be successful in that treatment, because oftentimes with the eligibility they get one shot with the free program, so we just want to make sure they're in a position to be as successful as possible. But it's huge strides with the medication that people can, you know, be cured. And then a lot of the patients we found through this program are, they've never had insurance before. They've never seen a doctor for primary medical care. And so not just getting them healthy with the hepatitis C, but getting them educated about how to utilize the healthcare service and have health insurance for the first time often in their life. So it's really changing the trajectory of their health. And that's very exciting for us and obviously very good for them.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. We're talking about HIV and hepatitis C care in Oklahoma, in Tulsa in particular, through the auspices of the OSU Internal Medicine Specialty Services with their Assistant Medical Director, Dr. Maddie Ladd, and with the CEO of Tulsa Cares, Kate Neary. Dr. Maddie Ladd, so we talked a little bit about HIV and hepatitis C. I guess, do you have any sense of how many individuals are co-infected, that is, have both a diagnosis of HIV and hepatitis C, or do we not have good numbers on that?
Sure, we do. At least when we're looking at it through our clinic system, we get probably about 5 to 10% that may be co-infected. But out of those, some may clear. Hepatitis C is usually cleared 15% of the time. So 85% of patients with hepatitis C need to be treated. It's even less when they're co-infected with HIV. And really less than 10% of those patients clear. So most of them are needing medications. Becomes a little more complicated with medication and interactions with their HIV medications, but yeah. Yes, can be treated.
Wait, so when you say clear, that 15%, those are people who get infected with hepatitis C, but their body, they're able to just clear it themselves, essentially.
Absolutely.
Without treatment.
Absolutely.
But so there's that vast majority that still, if they go on to have chronic hep C, would need treatment. And so the question becomes, as you pointed out, so we're talking about a lot of pills, essentially, right?
Right.
How do those drugs interact?
There are some medications that interact, but for the most part, we can treat patients who have HIV and hepatitis C together. We can usually find a regimen if we need to switch them off of something they're currently on, if it's interacting. It's a 12-week treatment for hepatitis C most of the time. And so to get them cured, which we couldn't say years ago, I still remember times with interferon and ribavirin, our response rates or cure rates were 46%. We weren't even at 50% chance of curing. Now we're above 95% and many times close to 98 to 100% chance of cure. As long as they can take that medication daily for 12 weeks, we can cure their hepatitis C.
Oh, that is really amazing. I mean, it's within really just the last 5 to 7 years.
Where 2015.
We've had, yeah. Mm-hmm. What are some of the newer trends and challenges in HIV care? As Kate, especially as you have, you said now entering your third year, what are some of the things you're seeing in the population of clients that you care for at Tulsa Cares with the success of treatment, of people engaged in treatment and staying treated? They're living longer, which is a good thing, but mm-hmm. presents a new set of challenges because sometimes there are complications of the illness as people age, and aging in and of itself can be challenging. So what kinds of, are there special programs you're looking at? Or
So we're seeing a couple of different trends over the past few years. One is that we're seeing a lot more new diagnoses of younger people under 30. In Oklahoma, about 40% of new infections are under 30. So that's continues to be kind of a concerning trend that we're focused on, and how we help create a community for some of these young people to feel safe and know how to talk to their partners and know how to access treatment. And then, like you said, we're having a lot of our clients living a lot longer, which is wonderful. Some of our clients, we've seen them for 20, 25 years. But as with anyone who ages, that presents oftentimes some other challenges around other chronic health conditions, such as diabetes, high blood pressure, heart disease. And so we're learning new ways to address some of those challenges, our nutrition program and nutritional supplements to help keep people healthy. And then also we still, lack of social support and isolation is still a huge issue with people living with HIV, especially people in poverty living with HIV. And so addressing some of those mental health issues around depression and anxiety for some of our older folks that have been alone for a long time. And so we're looking at different support groups and other programs that, again, create a safe space and try to create a family and friendly environment to help make sure people are taken care of at that mental health level, too.
You know, one thing I found really astonishing was that the number of your census of clients, 850 people, so there's an estimate of 6,000 people living with HIV/AIDS in Oklahoma. I mean, that's more than 10%. So you're seeing, I mean, more than 10% of the population, which is really amazing.
And then about 40% in our service area that we see.
Wow. So, wow. Yeah. And then I also saw a statistic that of individuals who have HIV that are low income, 9 out of 10 are food insecure. So that really continues to be an issue. Are those folks, I mean, there are services available, the ones you directly provide, as you mentioned, but then there's like the Food
Bank of Eastern
Thank
Oklahoma.
Thank you. Sure. Yes. There's Food Bank of Eastern Oklahoma. Are there other resources that you're able to connect them with?
We do. So we work with the OSU clinic to help see their patients for nutrition services when we can. And we do work with the food bank. We're able to access a lot of their produce. We got some turkey and chicken over the holidays for the clients, too. So they're wonderful. They provide us a lot of our food for much reduced price. We also have some special funding that helps us strategically shop for things. We try to pride ourselves on not just being kind of a drop-in soup kitchen type environment, but it's a place to get a weekly meal that is a salad bar and it's dessert and medically tailored nutritious meal that's a treat for people that oftentimes don't have that. We also stock our pantry with low sodium, low fat, low sugar items so that it's not only helpful in treating a chronic health condition, but again, addressing the issues of high blood pressure and issues like that. A lot of our clients have trouble keeping weight on or have some unfortunate side effects with some of the medication. And so our dietitian works with some clients to prescribe some nutritional supplements that help ease some of those barriers. So we're really focused on some of the specific needs that our clients have in addition to aging and dealing with chronic health conditions.
Dr. Maddie Ladd, I was curious if you could enlighten us on testing for both HIV and hepatitis C. How readily available are those services and where can people go in order to get tested?
Sure, absolutely. Many of our positive HIV tests come from Tulsa County Health Department as well as Hope Testing Center, and we also get some from the Equality Center. So those are three places that patients can get tested. Now, we also get some positive testing when somebody's sick and in the hospital and they may get tested for HIV and they get transitioned to our clinic. Anyone can call 211. It's a national hotline if they're looking for a linkage in their area. So they will ask for their zip code, and it will usually link them if you're in the eastern half of the state in Oklahoma, will link them to OSU Specialty Services. So that is one way to link with us.
That's great to know, 211. Yeah, so 211 provides listings of social services, I mean, not just for medical care, but for all kinds of social services, for elder care, for mental health counseling. So anyone can dial that from any phone, anytime. Right. I'm glad that you pointed that out. I'm curious, when someone has a positive HIV test, and you mentioned it, like the county health department, or does your clinic get those results and then do the outreach in order to get those people enrolled? Or is it incumbent on the testing place to try to encourage the person to get follow-up care?
Most of the time when they get tested, the testing center calls us with the patient information. And then what we try to do is go ahead and get them an appointment scheduled, because we have patients get labs and an intake appointment with our case manager first, and then they will have a provider appointment within 4 weeks. But we have recently started a rapid start program as well. So if it's a newly diagnosed patient, we want them to get into care, get linked with care quickly because of that HIV care continuum. And sometimes we can set up not only that case management appointment, but for them to see a provider the same day as well.
And that's medically speaking, obviously very important to get people, I think the science has advanced to the point where we know the sooner you get people in treatment, the better. I mean, it's logical, but we also know the science backs that up, because the less damage you do to somebody's immune system, the more likely they are to stay well for a longer period of time.
Absolutely. They oftentimes talk about this HIV reservoir, and if we can kind of put a stop to it in the beginning, get them on medications and get that controlled, we know starting them on medications earlier will control that virus, and we're hoping that that will also help retention and care, that linkage and retention that we're always trying to target.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guests today are Dr. Maddie Ladd, Assistant Medical Director of the OSU Internal Medicine Specialty Services, also known as the Ryan White Clinic, where they focus on particular care for individuals with HIV, but are now expanding and have specialty care for hepatitis C as well. And Kate Neary, who is the Chief Executive Officer of Tulsa Cares, a wonderful social service agency that provides wraparound services for individuals with HIV in eastern Oklahoma. And I wanted to ask both of you about your backgrounds a little bit and also funding. So Dr. Maddie Ladd, how did you get involved in care for individuals with HIV? Was it just sort of an intellectual curiosity, or was it something through your training?
So I actually trained through the OSU Internal Medicine Residency Program and graduated in about 2007 from residency there. So as I was going through residency, I trained through the Specialty Services Clinic and learned about HIV, just as our residents do now. We still have residents that train through the Ryan White. And then I went out and I was a hospitalist for about 7 years and decided to come back to the program to teach. I came back about 5 years ago, but then really found an interest in HIV. It was definitely growing. We had a completely different class of medications, the integrase inhibitors, that did not exist when I did residency. Piqued my interest. I started looking at more guidelines, became a lot more interested in the HIV clinic, and that kind of places me where I am today.
And is that the full aspect of the care you provide, or do you do general internal medicine with, and then, you know, have a day or particular focus with different patients on HIV care?
So I do only HIV, but I'm oftentimes the primary care doctor. I am an internist, and so I'm oftentimes the primary care doctor for those patients as well. Saves them from having to go to two separate providers. I still get to practice internal medicine and deal with hypertension and diabetes and all those other chronic conditions that we're seeing in a lot of our HIV patients. And so I get to treat both their other chronic conditions as well as HIV.
And when other doctors have individuals that they've diagnosed with HIV positive, do they refer them to you just for the HIV piece, or do they sort of transfer their care to you entirely, or does it just depend on the individual?
It depends on the situation, but I usually tell my patients, keep your primary care provider. If you have established with a primary care provider, keep that provider and I can treat your HIV. And what I try to do is just kind of close the gap and make sure we have continuity. So I will send my note to their primary care provider. I do that often. We're contracted with the VA as well. So I see a lot of the VA patients, but they keep their primary at the VA and I can still treat their HIV.
And Kate Neary, you're entering your third year as CEO at Tulsa Cares, but how did you get into nonprofit and social service work?
It'll be 20 years next year that I was able to take advantage of the AmeriCorps program through the National AIDS Fund. And Tulsa was actually one of five cities around the country that had an AIDS-specific AmeriCorps program. And it has made me a huge fan of national service and the AmeriCorps experience, but got me on the track to staying in the public health field and the nonprofit world, mainly around HIV prevention, sexual health, and reproductive health. So very fortunate to have had some experience and with Tulsa Cares before officially joining the team.
And so Tulsa Cares is a nonprofit, so it's funded as a 501c3. And so you have benefactors who provide, you have an annual fundraiser that's coming up in March, Red Ribbon Gala, which Tulsa is known for, you know, many of its big celebratory galas, fundraiser dinners. Red Ribbon is always thought of as one of the best. And what are other ways in which you are funded?
So thank you. Yes, we're very lucky to be the beneficiaries of Red Ribbon Gala. It's a very fun party and appreciate your involvement. We are also United Way agency. United Way has been a wonderful partner of Tulsa Cares, and we're fortunate to have their support. We also work with many other local foundations in town and on the national level. And we also receive some federal dollars for our case management services and our housing services. So those are the ways. We are mostly privately funded except for those federal dollars for those specific programs, but always looking to expand a little bit. And I'm fortunate that our pilot program, actually for the hepatitis program, was funded by the Healthy Kids and Healthy Families program through Blue Cross and Blue Shield. So we were very lucky that they found that program to be beneficial for the community.
Interesting. I didn't realize that. So is that something that Tulsa Cares had to apply for or was recognized? And is it out of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Foundation or is it through their direct like health insurance program?
It's from the, it's a foundation of the Oklahoma company here, and they do a set of innovative grants every year to help new programs get started. And so we were fortunate to be one of those few in the Tulsa area that were funded. And so we'll be looking for new funding next year and are already have been pretty fortunate to be able to sustain the program and grow it a little bit more next year.
And Dr. Ladd, to the extent that you know, because one of the nice things sometimes about being a doctor and working in an academic place is your job is to really do the clinical care and see the patients, but you don't necessarily have to be on the billing side or whatever. But Ryan White, for example, is a federal mechanism, if I recall correctly. And so there are federal dollars that go toward care of individuals with HIV that must support some of the specialty services at the clinic. And then, of course, if you know other patients have their own insurance through their workplace or commercial insurance or the Affordable Care Act, et cetera.
Absolutely.
But are there other mechanisms that support the OSU internal medicine? Or, I mean, are some of the patients, I suspect we still have this problem. We have not expanded Medicaid in Oklahoma, so there must be some uninsured as well who either just pay out of pocket or a copay, or there maybe is indigent care.
At least with the specialty services, the HIV clinic, we have patients who are uninsured, about 15% uninsured. And so those patients get strictly Ryan White funding, and that includes them to have their doctor's visit and any supportive services. So we also have mental health services available at the clinic. That is all covered for them. And we also get them on HDAP, which is HIV Drug Assistance Program, that is also funded then through the state, part of that Ryan White funding as well, and they're able to get on medication. So they're able to have everything covered. The only thing it doesn't cover is inpatient services or referrals, outside referrals. And we still encourage these patients to apply for insurance or marketplace so that they have those services. But we are able to provide the services for their HIV care and their medications.
Do people who have HIV wind up with needing inpatient care these days? I mean, if they're adherent to their drug regimens, often they don't because they're suppressed. But I mean, so if you wind up seeing folks who are challenged for one reason or another to stay on their meds and their HIV advances, do they wind up with opportunistic infections and being hospitalized? Is that something you still see?
Most of the time what we're seeing, we definitely see less opportunistic infections now than we did 10 or 12 years ago, even when I was in residency. But what we're finding now is those patients that are lost to care. And again, that's why the linkage, and we want to retain patients in care. When they're lost to care, they're off of medications. Now we're seeing their viral loads go up high without medication. This drops their CD4, drops their immune system, puts them at risk for those opportunistic infections. And most of the time they end up in the hospital during that period. And so it's important when they get hospitalized, then we actually have an outreach case manager who will go over to the hospital and try to get them on assistance for medications, link them back with an appointment to our clinic so we can get them back in care.
It sounds like an excellent system. I wanted to ask one last question to both of you, to if you could help explain to us what treatment as prevention is. Kate, let's start with you.
Getting patients into care, keeping them in care, and trying to address all of the barriers that prevent them from staying in care. If we can get them virally suppressed, HIV often ends up being the least of their problems. It's mostly around other health conditions and just issues around poverty. And so if we can get them virally suppressed, it's virtually impossible for them to pass the virus on to somebody else, which makes a huge difference in number of new infections. That's kind of where that treatment as prevention comes in. We still don't have a cure or a vaccine for HIV, so getting people to the healthiest possible point to where their quality of life dramatically improves and they aren't able to pass the virus on to somebody else, that's kind of our end goal. And so the treatment as prevention approach is what we call it.
Absolutely. We're looking at 90-90-90 targets. Mm-hmm. So we want 90% of people to know if they have HIV, know their diagnosis, 90% stay in care, be retained in care, and on medications for HIV to suppress their viral load. When that viral load is suppressed, then we can talk about you for you or undetectables, untransmissible, and that decreases the likelihood of them transmitting to a partner or partners.
And that's, is that CDC goals, 90-90-90?
Yes.
And last question, are we any closer to a vaccine, Dr. Ladd, HIV
so
vaccine?
So they are doing some studies in Africa, but I think we're still a little ways from having that vaccine. I know studies are still being done on cure, but again, we're still a little ways from being able to say that we have a cure in our hands.
Kate Neary is the Chief Executive Officer of Tulsa Cares, and Dr. Maddie Ladd is an Internal Medicine HIV Specialist with Oklahoma State Internal Medicine Specialists. For more information, you can go to their website at tulsacares.org. Well, that's our show for this Medical Monday. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. Our interviews are always available online at studiotulsa.org. For Studio Tulsa, I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Thanks for listening.